You're listening to In This League
on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ace. Featuring Bugman.
Oh, the yummy silence. Oh, it tastes so good, you guys.
Oh, he's on tilt. He's full tilt.
And the Welsh.
Nice.
Bugman, let's not overreact.
A little bit.
Are you serious?
Make a little pick. Get down tonight. What?
Nice.
Too high score, is that bad?
Visit InThisLeague.com for full podcasts and more. Coming to your ears now.
What is up? What is happening? This is In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am one of your hosts, Chris Welsh, who you can find on Twitter at Is It The Welsh right there. That's Scott Bogman. Bogman.
I'm a man. I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and brawn. That's what kind of man I am.
Who you can find on Twitter at Bogman Sports. He's a man, a manly man who talks with the deep voice.
Or in an alley, you know, or in a drive-through. You can find me in all kinds of places.
Yeah, you can catch me outside. How about that? Our new shirt. Pitch me outside. How about that? Go to InThisLeague.com. You can find that. We have got some killer stuff for you today, and I don't even want to waste any time because we are going to be spending the entire 2 hours here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network with two of the best fantasy baseball minds in the industry, and we've also got Paul Spohr and Steve Gardner. Oh, did you see what I did there? Oh. Burn. I burned our guests and they haven't come on yet. No. Our buddies Paul Spohr from Fangraphs and Steve Gardner from USA Today award winning. They are going to be joining us for a full 2 hours where we are going to be, it's kind of a round table, a town hall, if you will, of fantasy baseball information. We're going to be talking about starting pitcher values, depth at positions. We're going to be talking risk versus reward. And just know, there's going to be four of us on here. It's Spohr, it's Gardner, it's Bogman, myself. It's going to be rich and valuable for your fantasy baseball information. So, Bogman, do you think we should get the beautiful guests that we have to join us here, you know, so they can get our information? Clearly, that's what they want, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's why they agreed to come on. They're like, what are Bogman and the Welsh thinking?
Yeah, that's
clearly what it was. Yeah. They weren't like, okay, we'll do these poor little guys a favor.
Yeah.
It was, I want to know what they're thinking.
WWBWD, right? What would Bogman Welsh do?
Nobody with the Jesus.
That's what everybody's asking. All right, well, we're going to get right into it. It's two straight hours, the Fantasy Baseball Forum with Gardner and Spohr, and let's get those suckers on right now. I'm going to ask them what they want to call it. The Fantasy Baseball Town Hall Forum. I'm calling it maybe a campfire. It used to be Draft Soup. There's a whole bunch of names. But Bogman has actually probably already gotten the correct name where people will just call it, hey, that In This League episode with Paul and Steve. That's probably what the actual full title will be. Paul Spohr from Fangraphs, editor of fantasy content. And Steve Gardner, just the best in the industry. Podcast award-winning Steve Gardner with USA Today.
That's right.
Paul Spohr, let's start with you. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. We just finished our player caps over at Fangraphs. They pushed through last night. Still working on them. It's kind of a work-in-progress scenario, but the bulk of them are up. A few slackers didn't quite finish there, so we are getting to those. But big project to finish, and I know Steve is on the cusp of finishing one, too, which has got to feel great.
Hey, Paul, can I ask you something real quick?
Sure.
What's up, bro? You want to go?
What do you want to do, huh? What do you want to do?
You want to go?
I thought this was America! Huh? Isn't this America? I'm sorry, I thought this was America!
Wait. Hang on, let me get the scouting report on you from Brooks Baseball. Oh, you throw 8 pitches, and they're all 80-grade pitches? Oh, my God. I don't know
like
if I'll be able to hit you.
Trevor Bauer through 50 miles an hour.
What's up, bro?
Why don't you pitch me outside? How about that?
Pitch me outside. That is, by the way, I just want you to know, that is an endorsement for our new shirt from Paul Spohr. He fully endorses that fantastic new shirt.
Absolutely.
And if Paul gets it, you should probably have it, too. I'm just saying. So, yes.
Absolutely.
Paul's a big fan of mine, by the way. I hope everybody knows. Paul's a big fan of mine and my 8-pitch arsenal. What were the pitches? What was your favorite pitch of mine, by the way?
The cutter that you were like so confident that you could throw. The best part of that is how very clearly nonchalant and without any reservation, Scott completely shut you down.
That's
on the ability to throw any of those pitches properly, as any best friend should absolutely do to their delusional friend when they're talking about something, whether it's I could do this, you know, crazy thing, and I could create the next iPhone. No, you couldn't. I could go pick up that supermodel. No, you can't.
Like crazy thing, like you would build the All Fantasy pitches. Podcast MLB show team. No, you couldn't. That you said you were going to do last year?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. You know what his favorite pitch that he throws of mine, I call it the bullshit.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
that's
an 80 grade for sure.
Bogman's the manager. Bogman knows when to pull. He knows when to take the star out of the game. So that's what he did.
It was fantastic when he was just like, no, you can't.
Nope.
You cannot throw any of those pitches because it's true, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
It's 100% true.
Get him.
I know, get him. Thank you.
Great. And that's it crystallized y'all's friendship, and it was a really great moment.
Yeah, this is my intervention that I can't be a professional pitcher at 34 and how I look. But what's so great about this episode is it's not just one of our besties, Paul Spohr. It is one of our other besties, Steve Gardner, and we get to all be together and we get to talk about fantasy baseball. And Steve, you guys, let's not gloss over, because we briefly glossed over, award-winning podcast winner Steve Gardner with USA Today. Let's tout yourself a little bit, Steve. How did that feel?
It was great. You know, anytime you're recognized by your industry, that it has to feel good. And so I think it's one of those things that not only it gives you a bit of satisfaction, but it also raises the bar for now. What are you going to do next? You know, like you guys, every show builds on the next one, and you got to make the next one better. And so it keeps you focused and keeps you humble at the same time.
See, that's our fault, is every show has to be better. And we're like, oh, it can't all be the same.
We peaked at episode 3. So it's all
been downhill. Yeah. We peaked like 2 years ago when we had this whole thing about e-wrestling and it all went downhill.
I thought it was the episode where I said the quote that is repeatedly used.
Gaping hole.
Oh, that is one of them too. I mean, you're bringing us back. See, this is why we need you guys. We need to get back into people's minds. So we bring in Steve and Paul. Steve, you guys also have one of the big dogs coming out. Paul alluded to it. The Sports Weekly USA Today next Wednesday, the 22nd. Talk to me about what people can expect.
Well, it's just the big issue of USA Today Sports Weekly, and the fantasy folks kind of take over the issue. Yes. And we have it's all the rankings. You know, it's got my top 200 and position rankings. It's got worksheets and cheat sheets and columns, and it's got the results of the labor auctions, the AL and NL, the ones that we did a couple weeks ago. It's just got everything, and it's a great tool right before the season starts for the most part, and right before most people get ready to do their drafts before the season starts. So
one of the only things I still buy, by the way.
Fantastic. Print is not dead, gentlemen.
Only things I still buy. Yeah, I used to buy like 1,000 magazines. Don't do that anymore. That one I still buy.
Agreed.
Because it's so great. It's literally all my father will use to draft. 100%. He's only in one league, so he can cross it out to his heart's content. He doesn't even use the NL side. It's an AL only league, but he will not draft. He is in a complete panic if he cannot find one in Harlingen, Texas. But he loves the Leviathan. It's a great issue. I still absolutely love it. The release date is what makes it so good and so valuable over those other magazines, Scott, that you're talking about. Because I mean, those magazines, I contribute to some of them, and I really like them. Honestly, we used to say it's about a different magazine, but they're good for the articles that are in them. The actual rankings and stuff of those magazines is just not going to work. Yeah, it's just too dang old. And you know, Steve probably has this running up till right about now. I mean, I don't want to give away exactly when we're recording this, if you want it to be a secret, March 13th. But you know, his stuff can run right up until then and be timely. He can get Ian Desmond's injury in there. He can at least get David Price's injury. So I think that's what makes it so valuable, Steve. I love the Leviathan.
Thank you, guys. And yeah, you're right. I've been slaving over where to put Ian Desmond and where to put David Dahl and David Price and Jason Kipnis. So
we're going to talk about all of it here too. By the way, I'm excited.
Beautiful. Maybe this discussion will help me crystallize where I want to have these guys in the final ranks.
What I love about this too is I almost would kind of consider this is like in this league, because we don't write, Bachman and I, we don't put things in paper and print, and we're not that educated. This is why we do this. So this is like our version of like the Sports Weekly. This is our version of the most updated fantasy information with some of the best in the industry.
We're actually not even releasing this to anyone. This is just for me.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. So there's not going to be much publicity. But I mean, our own podcasts are outdated. Our positional ranks, I mean, they're still valuable if people want to go back and listen to those episodes, they can. But there's a sense of devaluation with injuries and performances and just off of the extra work that we all put in mock drafts and stuff like that. That we want the most updated information for our drafts that are coming up. This coming weekend, which would be the 18th, 19th, 20th, or the weekend right before the season starts. This is why we're doing this, and this is why we got both of these awesome guys on. I want to start by asking one question because we were talking off air before we started this, and this is something I have been talking to a few people about because Paul was like, I got a WBC one game today, then I'm going to catch up on a couple of the ITL pods because Paul's a
just
Paul's
one, jeez,
just a couple,
just one behind, and you put me on blast, man. This feels like a patented is it the Welsh cutter just zipping by my head.
Yeah, you never saw it coming. You just went right by your head. Actually, Paul was one of the first people, by the way, in ITL history that we had this great moment where we were talking about old Angels prospects, and I couldn't get Brandon Wood out of my head. I couldn't find him. We were talking about all the other ones, and all of a sudden I get this tweet after an episode, and Spore's like, it was Brandon Wood who you're thinking about. And then I'm like, no, thank you.
It was Dallas McPherson.
Dallas McPherson. See, damn it. I still can't do it. Why do you even listen to us, Paul? And that was the whole point. I was like, Paul is listening to our show. What a fantastic moment. And I still can't get it right. All right, so let me get back to where I was going here. WBC. We were talking off air, and Paul's like, I got to get this one game, and this has been awesome. And I got to see, I saw Puerto Rico and Venezuela on Wednesday and Thursday out here. And I've been having this same, I think, moment that you were kind of alluding to here, Paul, where it was just like, the WBC is awesome. Like, I am so excited to see players so ecstatic about baseball in March to a point where I've been sitting around like, what can we do with baseball to incorporate something? There's something about teams playing for their country and the excitement and the competitiveness that you almost don't see this competitiveness in June in actual baseball. So is it fair to say, Paul, that you're a big supporter of the WBC?
Absolutely. And here's the thing. I don't really need to fix it either. I'm fine with it being this amount of great. I think one thing that we do too much in sports is whenever we have something that we like, we instantly try to make it X amount better. This is perfect as is. Would it be great if maybe Kershaw and Trout and all them were in it? Sure. Doesn't matter though. This has just been so fun. There's something about playing for your country. Even if it's your mother's country, because they have liberal usage, and I like it. I think it's very smart to do that. I'm 1,000% in on it. Absolutely. Yeah. Makes these teams stronger to have, if your mother has Jewish descent, you can play for Team Israel. Fantastic. Even if you're not Jewish yourself, that is necessary. But I don't think we need to make a whole bunch of tweaks. The only thing I might change is the frequency, maybe every 3 years or every two, because it's just so fun. But amazing baseball when you're playing for your country. The pride that these guys have has been palpable.
I love the idea of two. Steve, I want to ask you this because this is something I was talking to someone about, where you hear a lot of complaints from teams, players, maybe coaches sometimes, where WBC, guys, the whole Salvador Perez thing where he got a little injured, and people are like, why WBC? And there seems to be this people tiptoeing around players playing for the WBC. But in my mind, I think this is the best thing for some star players playing in this type of competitive nature at this stage of spring training. I would actually want as many of my players as I possibly could to play and get a head start into being competitive into the season. Do you see the WBC as a negative or a positive for players in spring training?
No, I think it's a positive because, if you're going to play, take the injured guys out of it, and the guys that are coming off surgery and things like that. But if you're healthy and you're going to play, this is a fantastic thing because it gets you ramped up and in January, hey, I'm going to be playing in the WBC. I need to be in good shape. I'm not going to play myself into shape in spring training. And so I think that's where those guys are probably are much sharper than some of the other guys that just kind of stroll into spring training and work on pitches and do all that sort of stuff. These guys know that time is past. They've got to be ready to go. And, you saw Nelson Cruz hit, the clutch home run the other night. I mean, you just can't turn it on. You've got to be...
Right. Right.
You've got to be ready to play, and you've got to be concentrating, and I think that's what the WBC does. And it gives us these great games that we would never see in regular spring training.
I'm never worried
about the hitters, but I do worry a little bit about the pitchers wearing down at the end of the year. Do you guys worry about that at all, or is it just they're going to get in their cuts in spring training anyway? So
it's an individual case thing, right? There could be some guys who overthrow a bit, trying to put their best foot forward and maybe throw their arm out, something like that. It could certainly happen. You could see how it would go, but I don't know. You know, guys get injured in spring training all the time too. We just talked about Ian Desmond getting hit by a pitch. Alex Reyes was out before it even started. So injuries are going to happen. There's no way to perfectly avoid them. Is there maybe a little tinge extra risk here in the WBC? Sure, but again, it's case by case. So I'm not even too worried inherently about pitchers or any subset of player that plays in WBC.
You know, and I would also just throw out here as well, one positive, and maybe it's not like 1,000% correlated, but I have the correlation that I can give you real quick, is when you have some of your veteran players playing in this competitive nature, what it's also doing is it's giving a chance for some of these young prospects to get more playing time. Look at Ian Happ right now. Ian Happ is murdering spring training out here in Arizona. Dude's 8-for-10, and he's getting this opportunity because Javier Baez is out. And Amir Garrett, I don't think there's a correlate. I don't think there's any Reds pitcher that's in anywhere in the WBC, but I'm just saying we are seeing performances from top prospects at a higher level than we've seen, I don't know, in many spring trainings that I can remember, from Amir Garrett to Ian Happ to guys like Ahmed Rosario, and the list goes on and on. So there's just another little secondary nugget that's been a positive that the WBC is allowing. You're here.
Absolutely. I think that's a great call, and another positive aspect to WBC.
Yeah. And Tim Tebow even got to play.
Oh my gosh!
That might,
I know.
That might be the downside.
My goodness!
You might have found the one downside.
Nobody with the Jesus.
I'm kidding.
At least
about
he's
that.
Bringing stalkers to the ballpark. That's nice.
Well, and listen, I totally get why the Mets would run him out there, because spring training, it doesn't matter. I don't think he's taking anybody's food out of anybody's mouth. The money that they're making off of it, it's a business. I totally get it. They're selling jerseys left and right. Let him play a few games. But I don't like pretending that he's any good. And I don't like the coverage that he's getting. Like, they can do it. That doesn't mean it has to be over-covered as if he's anything close to a serious baseball player, because he's not. He's no good.
I just want to say, what disgusts me more than anything is my First Pitch app giving me a notification that Tim Tebow got a hit in spring training. And I was like,
that's brutal.
I was like, delete.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but coming up right after this break, more s'mores on the campfire for the in this league on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back. It's more of the Fantasy Forum Campfire Edition with Spore and Gardner. Let's get right into it. All right, so I want to get into some fantasy baseball here, because like I said, maybe a little bit. This is kind of our Sports Weekly Edition, where we get to pick the brains. We don't have to talk, number 18th overall player. We just get to talk about the strategy, and anything you guys want to throw out, please feel free. But before we start with some of the questions we put together, Steve, I want to start with you. Take your 9,000-foot view above everything that you have seen here with everything, be it industry drafts or mock drafts or the write-ups that you've done. Give me a takeaway that has popped out this season. Last year, Paul, I remember, we did an episode where you and I were both in agreement about, the depth of the ace starting pitcher, and that kind of blew up a little bit. But there is some of that stuff that exists. Steve, give me one observation from the 9,000-foot view of fantasy baseball from your perspective from drafting that you could kind of let us know about that you've seen.
Well, I think the one thing is that in terms of the outfield player pool, we always think that it's very deep. I think it is deep in the National League, but when I was doing the AL labor draft over the weekend, a couple weekends ago, looking at the American League and the difference between the depth of the player pool in the outfield in the American League versus the National League, it seems way less. And you need to make sure that you get outfielders and are not left with the dregs of the outfield in the American League. I found that really, really strange that it was that pronounced. So that was one thing that I took away from the labor drafts. And I was one that got three pretty decent $20 outfielders. I was the only one in the AL. And I feel really good about that because I look at some of the unsettled situations on so many of the AL teams and who's going to play where and where the at-bats are going to come from. I think that's something that's certainly not getting a whole lot of publicity, and maybe it shouldn't, but that's one thing, you know, you asked for a takeaway. That was something that was interesting to me.
Yeah, I love it. Paul, what do you think? 9,000 foot view over the landscape of your fantasy baseball, you know, outlook over the last couple months.
I think we're seeing a lot of depth in the infield positions that aren't first base, which is kind of different because usually you see depth at first base. There's still star power at the top, but I think it really starts to get sketchy even with somebody who I like Will Myers. I don't think he's a guarantee to fulfill his, you know, top 50, top 60 draft slot that he has. And then from there down, it really starts to get a bit dodgy. Catcher's a nightmare unless you want to pay top dollar for Posey, Sanchez, Lucroy. You know, Wilson Contreras is like another step down and then another big step to a glob of mush. Starting pitcher obviously has thinned out a bit. We had, you know, 20 something fantasy aces last year. You're certainly not looking at that in the same way this year. You go down to pitcher 20 and you might have confidence in him to lead your staff, but not at the same level. It's a different strategy at that point. If, you know, for example, my 20th right now is Carlos Martinez. And, you know, if you waited and you really stacked up your first five rounds, maybe you really like what you've got and you've got Martinez as your ace, but then you're going to fill in very quickly behind him to have a few other guys. Whereas last year you might have taken the 20th guy and it was probably somebody like Martinez or, you know, Sonny Gray, I know, was there because I was arguing against him being there as being too high. And you were to feel, okay, well, I don't have to get another pitcher so quickly because we thought that there were 20 guys who could lead rotations. So I think it's definitely thinned out. You know, there are six bona fide aces and then everybody else has substantial questions from that point on, at least one, whether it's performance or injury or in some cases both. And then I think the reliever pool is deep. At the top, the top three studs are great, but it's not a huge drop off to the next like four or five. I'm really loving newcomers like Ken Giles, finally fully established, Kelvin Herrera, Roberto Osuna has a little bit of a home run issue, but I really do like him. Edwin Diaz was amazing last year, and it's pushed down guys like Craig Kimbrell, Cody Allen, and Wade Davis. And if Wade Davis is healthy, he's every bit as good as those two and some of the other guys. So I think closer has some depth to it in mixed leagues. That's about it. Everything else that you guys have said, I agree with. The outfield piece was very interesting. Every year people want to say outfield is deep because there are superstars in it and there are an abundance of superstars, and they never account for the fact that we all need five at least. Other people are going to pluck from it for different positions, and that is a big deal. And I think we just look at the players, look at all these great guys, you can't get all of them, so it doesn't really count that way. So I think outfield always has kind of a measure of thinness to it that is rarely properly accounted for.
And it depends on where you're drafting too, because if you're drafting in Yahoo, everyone's an outfielder, you know, I mean,
yeah,
but if you're
exactly
drafting in ESPN or Fantrax or wherever else you're drafting, CBS, not everyone is going to be an outfielder. I want to ask you guys about spring training, and I know that Mr. Spore and I got caught a little bit on some starting pitching in spring training last year, Patrick Corbin, and also Juan Nicasio was really good in spring training last year too. But so we know not to take too much to heart in spring training, but give me one thing you've seen from spring training that has changed your mind in some way about any player, whether it be positive or negative.
And this could be like player specific or it could be an overarching thing. And I want to give an example real quick just to jump onto what Bogman's saying, like Amir Garrett or how about this one? You know, Granky's velocity, that type of stuff. You know, so it could be an individual takeaway that spring training is going to actually affect your mind. I was at that Sonny Gray game where he got blew up and I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to temper myself a little bit.
Maybe he's not a risk I'll take. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, his health piece is bad. Well, so I look at the same things that would have led me to believing in a Corbin and a Juan Nicasio last year in terms of, you know, strikeout to walk ratio. Again, at no point even, because I've always been spring training means nothing, spring training means nothing. I've softened on that to say I will look at certain things. You mentioned velocity. That's very important. That's more important than even like a shiny strikeout to walk ratio, particularly if a guy has lost something off of a level and hasn't gotten back to it. Of course, this all goes case by case. We know that. But you see guys missing bats, not walking guys, that is at its heart of pitching always going to be a positive. And if it's something that they haven't really necessarily done before and they're really doing it at a high level, Taiwan Walker, 13-1 strikeout to walk ratio in his 9 clean innings so far, that's something that appeals to me. It doesn't mean that I'm necessarily skyrocketing him up my board, but it's something that I want to see what's underneath it. Is there a new pitch? Is there altered mechanics? Is there higher velocity, etc.? So I will almost use the numbers as a guide to do further research. Keon Broxton's out there dominating right now and has 3 homers, two stolen bases, although he is 2-for-5, but he's running a lot. And some of the studies that have been, what is the value of spring training numbers, have suggested that even just attempts, even if it's not successful, can be a useful indicator of things to come. So the fact that he even has 5, even though it's 2-for-3, could be a positive for Keon Broxton. So I haven't changed much in previous years, except to soften a little bit in that there are some stats that can help you. If a guy is slugging on a higher level than previously, I like seeing Greg Bird come out and swing it very well, because I was very excited about him going into last year. Then he got hurt, and I still really like that power. So the fact that his power has been there in the spring is nice, especially because he's coming off of a pretty substantial injury. So little things like that, case by case, but power, speed, strikeouts, and walks, that's really what it boils down to in terms of things I'm going to look at.
What do you think, Steve?
I think Spohr hit pretty much everything I was going to say, and right down to the Greg Bird, as a matter of fact. No, the one thing to reflect a little bit on last year and why we kind of got pulled into Juan Nicasio. Worry about, you know, those guys. His big problem was facing guys the second and third time through the order. Yeah. When he was only going 5 innings or 4 innings or whatever and blowing everybody away, that was great, you know, and the strikeouts were up and the walks were down and all of that sort of thing. But yeah, you're going to have to, if you're a starting pitcher, you're going to have to be able to go through the order 3 times and maybe a 4th time. So that's why look for guys that are experimenting with a new pitch. Talk to Dylan Bundy, and, you know, he's trying to throw that cutter back into the mix that was so good, you know, when he was in high school that had all the scouts raving. He's putting that back into the mix, and he had a couple of good starts and then had a bad one on Sunday. So, you know, those are kinds of the things that I'm looking at to see if they can incorporate those in, you know, where players are hitting in the batting orders, to see what the manager's tendencies are, to where he likes to put guys. I'm going to get on ahead of Paul on this one, on the Detroit Tigers, because who's going to hit second for the Tigers? Is it going to be Justin Upton? Probably not, because Brad Ausmus doesn't like the way that things worked out with him in that second spot, even though he seems like a pretty good fit. It wasn't mentally a good fit for him. I think Nick Castellanos is a great guy to hit in that number 2 spot.
Yes.
He's one of the guys that's boosting up on my draft rankings, and I got a chance to see him play in spring training, liked what I saw, and he looks perfectly healthy. I think that's another thing, too. Guys that are coming back from injuries, can, you know, guys that have had wrist injuries or shoulder injuries, you know, Greg Bird being one of those guys. Yeah, nice power already. 3 home runs in 11 games. That's great to see. And I think that he's going to get more playing time than Chris Carter is at first base there. So those types of playing time issues. And then, you know, pitchers like Matt Harvey. Can he throw? Is he throwing? How much is he throwing? And like what you said with Granke, if he doesn't have the velocity, well, yes, yeah, some pitchers go through a dead arm period in spring training, but can he get it back? And I think there is definitely a level of concern with Sonny Gray, and definitely a level of concern with Granke.
Okay, so I've got 2 quick things, and I want to follow up with what you were saying. A perfect example that we talked about just a week or two ago, when you're looking at where guys are batting. Bogdan, remember we had the conversation about Moncada, where they exclusively were batting Moncada. The White Sox were at 2, almost in preparation, so you could kind of have that in your mind, like when this guy comes up, he's going to be 2 or 3. When they bring him up. So I'll just kind of piggybacking there. Just real quickly on Granke, I just want to ask, because you guys have both kind of, we've talked about him, how do you weigh results versus a situational issue like losing velocity? Granke just struck out 7, and I think he went like 3 or 4, whatever, but his velocity didn't top 91. So how are you going to treat a player performance in spring training versus a dip in velocity? Just quickly, Steve.
I think the numbers necessarily don't matter as much as what they're actually doing and trying to accomplish. So I'm going to reserve judgment on Greinke. I think he got very unlucky last year. And the fact that the Diamondbacks have improved the defense around him, and I think that's, and the batting average on balls in play is probably going to swing back in his direction. So I'm watching him carefully because he's so good and has a long track record. But I am a little bit concerned.
Paul, you last year, you put the worry, rightfully so last year, and a lot of people to say, hold up, Greinke, he's moving down my list. I'm concerned. This year, performance-wise, like I said, you know, last outing was fantastic, but velocity was averaging, as Bogman had said the other day on our show, like 89, 90, and he topped at 91. Just quickly, how are you going to weigh both of the positive versus the negative with Greinke?
It's a situation where if he's comfortable, I kind of listen to him. This guy really knows what he's talking about with his pitching, and he didn't seem too concerned. I'm not sure he's going to run and panic and freak out and say, oh, I'm screwed, I'm terrible now. But I think he would get an idea if he really thought that there was trouble, and he couldn't have been less concerned about sitting at 89, because he knows that even those two ticks back to 91 is really all he needs. If he can just be in the low 90s, I don't think Greinke's necessarily an overpowering sort of guy. It's the secondary stuff that's going to win for him, and the command of that secondary stuff. So the fact that he's having positive results actually means a little bit more to me than anything. If there's reports of sore this, sore that, tweaked this, then we change the scope of everything. But yeah, I was down on Greinke because I thought he was going to fall back a little bit. I didn't think he was going to completely fall off and get hurt. And now I'm almost back in because the price has come back down. So a lot of times it matters on price. And you know, you hear folks, oh, you didn't like him now, and now all of a sudden you change. It's all because of price.
A 1,000% I agree on that. That is my baseline of a lot of my drafting, where I can hate a player, you know, 2 years ago, and then this year it's like, well, I'm not paying a second round for him now. I'm not paying a third round.
I don't like the idea of like hypocrisy. It's not hypocrisy. We're in a market, and things change in this market. And so, now I'm willing to go back in with Greinke, especially with that 89 still sticking in some folks' heads and his price dropping a little bit. Okay, now I'll take a shot and bet on him, because I don't think he needs to be overwhelming. He could probably even succeed at 89, 90, but I want him at that 91, 92 range to feel particularly safe, as long as the secondary stuff is popping too. So for Greinke specifically, you know, I'm not terribly concerned. Otherwise, I'm looking at the thresholds, and Steve was starting to get to this, like Matt Harvey. Are they getting to the pitches that they were supposed to have? He's going to pitch 40 pitches today. He only pitches 28. That's troublesome. I don't care about the results. If he's supposed to pitch 40, he pitches 45 pitches and gave up four runs. He got the pitches in that he needed. He worked on whatever. We don't always know what they're working on either, so we can make justifications, or we try to say that this 7-run outing means more than this one does. It's all garbage unless there are skills behind it that are problematic. Like, I'm pretty in on Matt Moore this year. You look at his spring numbers, they've been bad. 14 hits, 8 walks in 11 innings with leading to 7 runs. I do like the 11 strikeouts, and then I am going to discount that a little bit because he's going to play in San Francisco, and part of the reason I even like him is that he's in San Francisco. So there's a lot of contextual stuff that matters for these guys that you can't get too hung up. That's why there's no universal, just look at this and you'll have all your answers.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's Bogman's guy.
All right, we're going to pause there, but you got to stick around because you got to love what you're hearing from Spore and Gardner. And it's Bogman and the Welsh in this league on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. More coming up after this break.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, let's finish up to the top of the hour. More of the Fantasy Forum. Paul Spore, Steve Gardner, USA Today on In This League. Let's do it. All right, so let's stick with starting pitchers here. We got a couple more questions on starting pitchers here. And you actually totally hit this earlier, Paul, when we're talking about SP1. So I'm going to create a baseline here for us. Going into the season, let's call Tier 1 Kershaw, Max, Noah, and Bumgarner, for just argument's sake here. Tier 2, and I might maybe be adding a pitcher because you said there were 6 aces. Tier 2 is Sale, Arrieta, Kluber. Just for argument's sake here, I'll bet you Arrieta's out of Paul's. Those 7 guys. What I'm getting at here, those 2 tiers, let's call them lock SP1s. Those are the guys that are going probably in the first 30 picks. You know, I could see Kluber going around 30. So first 2.5 rounds, those are the starting pitchers that are going in there. But there's kind of a base sign of drafting sometimes to say, do I have to have one of those guys? Do I have to have the true ace, or am I comfortable going lower? Me personally, I am comfortable going lower this year, maybe down to the point that Carlos Martinez, Chris Archer is my SP1, and then really building a staff around that while putting my offense together. So what I want to ask is, what is your lowest baseline ace that you're willing to have on a team? Steve, let's start with you real quick. The number one SP pitcher, the SP1 pitcher that you could have on your team, who is the lowest name guy, maybe that you've already drafted or that you would be comfortable with?
All right, I'll look at the labor mixed draft that Paul and I were both in. That was, I took five hitters in the first five rounds.
Yes.
And I probably should have gone with, instead of that fifth hitter, instead of taking Justin Upton, I probably should have taken Justin Verlander. And I think bottom line. Verlander can be a number one, was a number one last year, and I think he would be, you could be very comfortable having him as your number one. I passed on him, and what that did to me is that made me start to scramble and maybe take a few extra chances. And I think this can be done too. But the next round, I had Masahiro Tanaka as my first pitcher taken, and I was okay with that. But he's not going to get the strikeouts that Verlander is, or some of the other guys. I think John Lester would have been in that tier that I would have liked to have. Maybe Carlos Carrasco. I think that's kind of where we start drawing the dotted line, if you will. But I think Tanaka is probably below that. And because I took Tanaka as my number one, I had to take a few more chances on guys like Garrett Cole coming back. Rick Porcello fell, so I picked him. Felix Hernandez, you know, even further down, you know, his stock has dropped considerably along with his velocity. So I think you can manage a team. You don't have to have that A starting pitcher, and you can build a winning team, but it does help to have somebody that you can count on as a rock solid number one who will get you, you know, close to those 200 strikeouts and get you really good ratios because they're pitching a lot of good innings.
That's definitely
like David Price, right, guys? Like David Price, guys?
Well, this has been a lot of the baseline of what I've been doing, by the way. I am more into taking those chances based on the value stuff that we just talked about, Paul. I want to take more of those chances and taking Harvey Leite, taking Cole if I needed to, taking some of the younger arms like Tyon and Paxton. So I'm a lot more comfortable having an SP1 that's a lower name. But Steve said it at Justin Verlander. Paul, what do you think? What's your baseline low-end SP1 that you could be comfortable going into a season with?
Well, in that draft, we got David Price, Jason Collette, and I, and we have Price, Cueto, and Verlander in an equal tier. You can kind of mix them up and just pick one out, and we decided, Cueto was gone, we decided to go ahead and go with Price, and Verlander was still available. That's kind of where we were. Now, I will say that in this particular instance, since we're working as a team, I was misreading. I thought there was somebody later who I was like, we should have taken him. I was reading the wrong way, so scratch that. Those were our last three guys. They were all three available. I was going the wrong way. Price, Cueto, and Verlander. We took Price. Cueto then went Arrieta, Darvish, Strasburg, Lester, Archer, DeGrom, and then Verlander. So a lot of folks went in that area. We would not have been as comfortable with a lot of those guys in between Price and Verlander as aces, namely Arrieta. Strasburg, Darvish probably could have gotten away with it, but I really wanted one in that tier. I'll probably replace Price, and obviously I'm moving him down. I'll probably put somebody in that tier with Verlander and Cueto. It's probably going to be DeGrom, by the way. Speaking of spring training, his spring training is making me feel very good that ulnar nerve surgery is not an issue for him, and I'm going to get him back up into that fantasy ace level. So I think it's the six bona fide aces, and then another four to six, depending how you feel, semi-aces, you know, mostly fantasy aces.
So DeGrom, are you saying like DeGrom would be like that?
DeGrom's now in there. Yes, okay. DeGrom is now in there. At the time, he wasn't, because we didn't really know yet. This draft happened almost a month ago at this point, and so we would have been sketchy on him. Now that we feel more comfortable, I feel like I could either talk Jason into it or he'd already be on board. But like Aaron Sanchez, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Even your boy Carlos Martinez, I'm not sure I want him frontlining. Even our boy Carlos Carrasco, who we loved last year and we had frontlining, I don't know that I want him heading up my rotation, or else like Steve weeks that you have to then alter your draft and bang, bang, get a few other guys very quickly. We took Price. We felt great about it. And we didn't get Duffy until round 8. Price obviously has blown up on us a little bit, though not completely. And we don't know that he's definitely done. But, you know, fill in Cueto there. That's fine. We still would have done the same thing where we take our next pitcher several rounds later. And I really like the hitters and closers in those rounds 4 through 7 or 8, depending on how you do it.
What about Chris Archer?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Just to add one more name.
We did the mock, and that was who I said last week was that is my bottom barrel last guy I want as my ace is Archer.
Yeah, I love Chris Archer. I feel very comfortable about him coming back. He had those mechanical issues last year, no doubt about it, but the stuff was still there, and you could still see it at times at peak form. And so, yes, he makes it in there. But then at that point, once because I have him ahead of Carrasco and Tanaka, and once you start getting to those guys, it's not that they can't do it. It's just that you have to what we're talking about here is the point of demarcation where you have to alter your draft strategy a little bit.
Or I would just point out that I am going in with the strategy of doing this where I want to go heavy hitting. Then I want to go potentially like an Archer Martinez or something, just, you know, for argument's sake here. Those are the guys. A couple more hitters in that 80-90 range. Then I want to jump in like that 9th, 10th, 11th. And I want to go like, you know, boom. I want to get like Harvey, Paxton, Felix, and I want to pack in some risk former aces with some younger, bigger arms, and I kind of want to go in like that, and I'll build depth around potentially getting a couple 200 strikeout pitchers without paying the price. But it's important to have, you know, a lit offense if you're going to do that.
How many teams do you guys have? There's a point to this question. How many teams do you guys have? Is it like a million apiece?
No, different formats. For me, I probably have 10 to 12 teams.
10 to 12, Spore?
I'm closer to that level this year. I've really cut back. I've had to make some hard decisions, tell some hard no's this year because I felt like I was losing focus.
How many Clayton Kershaw shares do you guys have on those teams?
None so far.
Zero for me, too.
Oh, baby.
That's what I thought. See, that's what I thought is the experts usually just do not do that. They just can't. They can't take Kershaw because
Kershaw.
Verlander.
Yeah, Porcello.
Do you do the Verlander one too?
He does it.
I only do it now. To screw with Chris.
Okay, because the Scott White does that on CBS. Verlander. It's just like your Kershaw.
Oh man! Why are we getting negative reviews? All right, Bobby. What do we got?
Carlos Carrasco.
I just wanted to know how many Kershaw shares because, no, you know, I am not surprised at all that you guys don't have any. But let's talk about your favorite post 100 overall starting pitchers. So basically your favorite starting pitcher 3 and starting pitcher 4 that you guys have owned on your teams.
So post 100 meaning
like overall, like not pitcher. Yeah, like overall
starting pitcher.
Overall player.
Yeah, overall players. But it's like SP3, SP4, like your favorites in that SP3-4 range.
In fact, I've got a piece that's coming out on usatoday.com in the next, I don't know, it could be out by the time this podcast hits the air. But I look at starting pitchers that are due for breakouts this year, who have had, you know, any number of bumps in the road, I guess you could say, and I have 5 of them, so I can give you just a couple of them. Yeah. Alluded to Dylan Bundy with his new pitch, you know, his slider that he's re-adding, that cutter slider mix. He's one of them. Taiwan Walker is another. I got to talk to him in spring training, and you know, he's doing the same thing. He's adding a slider in this year, so that's another thing, and the results have been fantastic. He's finally healthy, and I think that's part of it for guys that are ready to break out is that, you know, maybe they've had injury issues and have kind of tried to throttle it back a little bit, and that was what Bundy said, that he wasn't going to throw his cutter because of the injury possibilities, so he shelved it, and then now he's had a season where he was healthy and a full off season. He's ready to add that back in. So those two guys are two that I really like, and I think we've alluded to James Paxton a little bit here already today.
Talk about cutters that got added back in. I was just talking about this the other day. Yeah. Like, it is incredible the turn that pitchers have as soon as they start throwing the cutter. When they get out of, you know, as long as they don't have Arizona coaching them and tell them to not throw a cutter, the cutter is like the key to success.
Well, and the thing with Paxton, too, he was talking about his arm slot. And when he went down to the minors last year, he was reunited with his old pitching coach, Lance Painter, who he had in Double A. He's now with the Triple A team for the Mariners in Tacoma. And he worked on his arm slot, and he changed his arm slot a little bit. And you remember last year when he came back up to the majors, he was throwing 2-3 miles per hour faster than he ever had before in his entire career. And he ended up, I think, with the third highest fastball velocity of any starting pitcher in the majors last year, behind Thor and Nathan Eovaldi. And not only that, it improved his control as well. So even though the results didn't really show it, you know, and his ERA was up close to 4. His fielding independent pitching was a run lower than that. And it just looks to me like he's the classic, and I'm sure, you know, Paul's been on him as well. He looks like one of those classic cases of guys who everything didn't work out last year. And even if he just has normal luck, he's going to be really good this year.
Yeah, I love James Paxton. I'm very excited about him. Wrote him up in my AL leap year candidates, guys who I think are going to take a big step forward. Carlos Rodon was in there on the National League side. Taiwan Walker was there. So I'm in lockstep there. He is going after pick 100. He's probably more of an SP2, though. Danny Duffy, he's right around that pick 100 cusp. So I'll give him a brief mention, but I won't really count him. Kevin Gausman's still a guy that I'm staying firm with, because I still think he's like one adjustment away from really becoming a superstar. He has to keep the ball in the park. There's no doubt. There's work to be done, but that's an adjustment that can be made, that can be tweaked. Sharpening your command, you know, there's a difference between control and command, and he's a good example of it. He doesn't walk a lot of guys, but he doesn't throw a lot of quality strikes at times either, and they end up getting hit. 96 miles an hour, straight as an arrow, and when the pitchers, or excuse me, when the hitters know it's coming, can be sent back the other way to 156 miles an hour. All the time, because that's what major league pitchers are, or with regularity, I should say, not all the time. But Kevin Gausman needs to be sharper, but I do like him. So Gausman, Paxton, Rodon, Taiwan Walker, and then I mentioned earlier, I do like Matt Moore and John Gray. You know, some folks are just allergic to Coors Field, and I get it. It's a very volatile place, and it makes things very difficult. Weirdly enough, it was John Gray's road work that kept him from having a breakthrough last year, only having a 4.61 ERA. It's because he was so bad on the road, including a shellacking 9 earned run outing at St. Louis. He needs to be sharp on the road. The problem, or the issue with playing in Coors, is that your margin for error on the road is much less. And that puts a burden on him, but I think it's a burden that he can withstand. John Gray has elite stuff, and there's always going to be a discount for a pitcher in Coors.
I love it. That's great stuff. All right, let's move out of starting pitchers here. Let's get into the hitting. And when we're getting into hitting, I think, like, you know, I think whether it's for the good or the bad, 2017 has one headline, and it's going to be stolen bases, because power has sold stolen bases as the unique stat. It's the steals or blocks from basketball. It's the stat that everybody is chasing this year, and we're seeing it more and more with ADPs, and how, you know, there's only a few elite guys. Then there's some low end, you know, like the Jankowskis and the Dysons that people are chasing. So where I'm going with this is, does stolen base make sense to being drafted as high as it is, or is it the winning strategy, and it's deservedly so? You know, I mean, there's more power than stolen bases, and are you willing to pay the prices for the ADPs of players like VR at 44, Hamilton, who he has a Yahoo ADP of 84, but he's going in the 50s, 60s, and D Gordon has a Yahoo ADP of 74, but he's going probably about between 60 and 75. So
depends on if you're drafting the Welsh.
Yeah, it depends if I'm drafting
for
D Gordon. That's 100% right. So the main question are stolen bases undersold or oversold in 2017? Paul, let's start with you.
They're probably a little bit oversold, because I think what needs to be realized with the dearth of stolen bases is that you don't need as many to compete. So I don't think you necessarily have to overpay. I think it's a weird thing in the fantasy market where sometimes we forget that when the market is flooded with something, that means you need more of it to compete. And so, yes, there is a lot of power, and there's a lot of power available late, but 20 homers isn't what it used to be. So just saying that I can get 20 homers later, it doesn't mean the same thing. And so I still don't really like the Rabbits, the speed only, and not necessarily only, because I know that like D Gordon at his best still gets you runs and batting average. So I don't want to say only, but like the powerless speed guys, the powerless Rabbits. So that doesn't include VR. And I don't even think it includes Trey Turner, who I think is probably going to be like a low double digit homer guy, similar to what he had last year. I think he could actually match his 13 homers just over a full season. I don't really think he's necessarily going to grow there, but that's enough. If I'm getting double digit or, you know, just 9 to 12 homers, that's enough to not be a power deficient speedster for me. So I don't include Turner in VR, and I will pay for them. But if I get like VR, I don't think I'm going to focus on speed the rest of the draft. Now, if I get some guys who can run, that's great. But one speed stud is literally all you need to get middle of the pack points. And then maybe you can supplement in season. So I'm not allocating a lot of draft resources to speed this year because I just don't think you need to.
There are players that are also, I think, being undervalued. Bogman and I have talked about this, that you can get speed with cheap where everyone's paying the price. You got the Jose Ramirez's, who's post 100, Eduardo Nunez. You can find stolen bases in other places. So, Steve, stolen bases, are stolen bases going to become the homers of old? You know, home runs of old, where it's like, I gotta pay the top price to get a guy with 40 homers. It's now, you know, potentially, is that stolen bases? Could it be flooded more? Undersold, oversold? What do you think about stolen bases?
No, I think the one thing that people need to keep in mind is it pumps up the value of the guys like Paul Goldschmidt and Ryan Braun last year, and hopefully this year as well. Guys that can hit for power, but also will steal a decent number of bases. I think it bumps their value up considerably so that you don't have to go and get the Billy Hamiltons or the D Gordons or somebody like that that's going to mm-hmm. hurt you essentially in the other categories and force you to get them to compete. I think you're right, too, is that there are guys that are lower in value that don't get a lot of hype. The Ben Reveres of the world, Malik Smith, Roman Quinn, even, you know, to go really deep in NL only leagues. I mean, I think you'll see guys come up, the guys on the Padres, Margot and Jankowski and guys like that. I think those guys can be had cheaper. And if you need to get to supplement your speed and your stolen base totals, I think you can go after those guys. And if you build a kind of a balanced portfolio and get your Goldschmidts or Braun's or whatever early, then you don't have to go fishing for the one trick pony, so to speak. So I think there are two schools of thought: those people that can get those balanced players and don't have to go fishing, and then if you don't get those, then you sort of have to make the call of, okay, I need to get one of them. And that's where I think a lot of those guys are getting oversold and their prices are going way high. A Jerod Dyson, for instance, went for $19 in AL. Oh,
good Lord.
Yeah, I mean, that's the price of speed. If you get yourself in a bind and need to start paying, there are going to be other people that are going to be in that same sort of a situation on draft day, and that's where the danger occurs, I think.
All right, well, let's stop right there. End of the hour. We've got a whole bunch more. It's not ending. There is an hour two. It's Bogman. It's myself. It is the amazing Paul Spohr and the equally as amazing Steve Gardner. So don't go anywhere. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hour two, more of Gardner and Spohr coming up. Talk to you in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
We are back. It is hour two of In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thank you so much for tuning in. As you always do, you can find us on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh, at Bogman Sports, and everything we have going on at InThisLeague.com. But we are joined by our dear friends, Paul Spohr, Steve Gardner from Fangraphs and USA Today for our Fantasy Baseball Forum. If you missed any of hour one, you can go catch it on demand. Search In This League or ITL. You can get the podcast or the FNTSY version. But let's pick right back up.
All right. A lot like Mr. Clayton from LA, since I can't say his last name correctly. How many combined D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton shares for you guys?
Zero.
I have one, but it's a keeper league, and it's an NL-only league, and I had Billy Hamilton as a prospect. So I have Billy Hamilton in one. That's it.
Okay, because I was about to say, I was about to rephrase it. Do either of you have any shares of him? And I think, Steve, you answered it that you have one of just Billy Hamilton, because, Bog, you were asking them combined, right? Or were you asking?
I just meant D or Hamilton.
Oh, okay. And, Paul, you have no shares of either one of those.
Zero.
Okay. Not surprising. A lot like Kershaw. Rank. Ugh. Can you guys rank the position depth 1 to 5? One being they have the least amount of depth there, and we'll go with first base, starting pitching, outfield, third, and short.
Okay.
We'll start with you, Spore.
Okay. In terms of least deep, I would say first base, outfield, shortstop, third base, pitcher, third base.
Pitcher being having the most depth. That's interesting. I thought shortstop actually might be 4 on that. Actually, I don't know if I really had any anticipation of what you would think would be the most depth. Outfield, first base makes sense, but you're most comfortable with starting pitching still.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a bias because I feel so comfortable with that pool. It's just a different pool to it's kind of hard to include it in an exercise like this because the requirements are so different. But I still feel very comfortable in those middle tiers, even though I don't love a lot of the top end, as we talked about earlier, at least paying the price for it. Once you kind of get to, you know, about pitcher 25 or so, and you go down pretty far, I feel there are big clusters, like obscene clusters, like, you know, pitcher 50 to pitcher 80 probably doesn't have that much separation, or certainly not as much separation as 30 slots might make you feel. So yeah, I feel pretty comfortable. You know, you still got Michael Wacha going at pitcher 101, and that's crazy to me. Jose Barrios has been thrown out in the trash, and that's crazy too. Great upside play. So yeah, I still feel very comfortable with pitching. But third base is really good. There's a lot of secondary third basemen that I would be comfortable starting, let alone putting in at corner.
How about you, Steve? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I love the depth at third base. I might even put third base ahead of everything because that's one of the positions that I've waited on in a couple of my drafts already this year, and including that mixed league that Paul and I are in. I waited and got Ryan Healy late, and he's my starting third baseman, yep. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I'm talking about. That group with ridiculous. Castellanos and Moose, even Gung, if he doesn't get a suspension. I mean, yeah, third base is so hot. It's definitely the best position in among batters.
Yeah, Gurriel is in there, you know, and he's gonna play every day and is gonna
Ray
play
Clam.
In Houston. Fantastic. Yeah. So and who knows what Pablo Sandoval is going to be, but he's probably like the 30th of the third baseman.
Fact.
So I think there's just that's true.
Yeah,
that's an easy call there. But yeah, I think third base is just ridiculously deep, and I've been waiting a lot in my drafts on getting one. I agree with Paul. The pitchers, especially, you know, when you've got the possibility of the guys that have had their price pushed down because of injuries or whatever concerns, you know, if they can stay healthy, or Garrett Richards could be almost an SP1, and you're getting him, you know, 70th overall or something among starting pitchers. It's crazy. So yeah, I think pitching definitely has depth, and then I love a lot of the shortstops too. I think you've got to put them up there. And the one thing too is that you've also got a lot of the crossover, you know, guys that are eligible at multiple positions, whether it's, you know, VR is going to get a second base added to shortstop and third base. And, you know, talking earlier about one of those 20,000 feet observations, I think the number of multiple position guys, and I'm getting a little off track here, so please just indulge me for a second. I think the number of multi-position guys that make a difference is a lot greater this year than it's been in the past, so that you can get those guys earlier in drafts, and that gives you flexibility later in drafts, where it seems like most of the time those multi-position guys were the late guys that you just try and pick up. You know, Sean Figgins was, you know, one of the classic ones of those guys, but he wasn't really that good, but you just got him because he has multiple positions. I think this year, more of those really good guys that are eligible at multiple positions are higher up. So it gives you the flexibility to take a first baseman or a second baseman or a shortstop later on in the draft. And you don't have to worry so much about slotting your individual positions.
We've had a lot of people.
Teams are valuing, teams are valuing flexibility more, and we're really seeing it even at the top end with somebody like a Chris Bryant. Yep. And so I absolutely think that it's a bigger part of the game. And even with more in that are viable, I still like getting them though. I think that flexibility is something that we still don't know how to put a price on for like an auction or even in a draft in terms of how many picks it's worth. But I put a pretty high value on it. It's not only good in the draft, but I think it's really good in season. The more capability you have to take your stab at any free agent, the better. And sometimes you see the free agent of the week, you can't even get because you have nowhere to put them. So I think that flexibility is still a little bit underrated in the market.
We've had a lot of people talk about the first round and wanting to take Goldie second over Mookie. And sometimes, I mean, it's crazy, but even first over Trout, just because first base is not as deep as it traditionally is this season. Obviously, you're not taking him over Trout. But would you guys put Goldie over Mookie Betts in any situation because first base has less depth than it usually does?
I'm not against that. I don't think that's crazy at all.
But okay. Would you do it over Trout?
I don't know that I would. Just because it depends on the size of your league, number one. But if you have that like second pick overall and you pass on Goldschmidt, you're still going to have an opportunity to get Edwin Encarnacion or Freddie Freeman or somebody like that who's still those, pretty good.
But those those steals are so nice. Mookie Betts is going to get some too. I love Mookie, and he's been fantastic now for two seasons. But you know, Goldschmidt has a longer track record too. I could see it. I think I'm actually taking. We just got done saying how deep third base is, and yet Nolan Arenado is my number two player just because I think he's so much better with the home runs and RBIs totals that he's just about guaranteed. I still think he has like a 320 season coming because of Coors Field. He still hasn't maximized that park for base hits yet. And once that happens, he's going to have that spike season of 320. So I actually still like him over Mookie. And then you start getting into Mookie, Harper, Goldschmidt sort of thing. But I don't think it's crazy. If someone takes Goldschmidt over Betts, I'm not dismissing that out of hand.
Well, first round, do you guys take position depth into accountability at all? Because I usually don't. I usually just go hard line what I have my top 12 at, and I'll figure out the rest of my depth later. Do you guys take into account position depth in the first round at all, or is it just get the best player?
I usually just get the best player. I don't know about you, Steve.
Nope, same way.
Because you have no idea how the draft's really going to break out. Exactly. Even looking at like ADP and trying to guess, you know, we know ADPs are virtually worthless when you get a group with, you know, 11 other guys and gals. You have no idea how they're going to draft. So no, just get a great player and start building.
Yep. Love that you hit that. All right. We're going to do some player debates here in just a minute, which should be fun, but I want to not skip over this. I want to make sure we talk about risk versus reward. Some people go in and this is a major strategy where they are going to take advantage of all the risk guys that have the low value, you know, they're being drafted lower. Kind of like I talked about, I tend to do sometimes, like the Harveys and Felixes. And then there are some people like Bogman, rightfully so, and maybe probably more the majority of the industry is like this, where you want floor guys. You know, you want guys that are less risk, so you know what you're getting into the season with, and hopefully you hit on one or two, but you got all your floor guys. So, and what I mean by this is there's multiple areas about this, and to cover a few players if you can, if you have intense thoughts about them. But these include Trey Turner, who, you know, based on what he did last year, we are paying for what he did last year, but it goes to injuries. guys like Ian Desmond, who's now out. I think I saw Kiermaier did it, had the same injury, was back in 7 weeks, or saying the timetable is 6 weeks, and then call it, you know, I would say another couple weeks. I would be surprised if he's back by June. So let's just, for argument's sake, let's say June 1st he's back. So you've got injury guys like Desmond, guys like Price. You've got the prone to injury guys like Stanton, equity guys like Turner. Steve, let's start with you. How are you going to approach risk versus reward and some of the exact players I talked about?
Well, I think number one, you need to have a solid base and you need to limit risk in your early picks. Now, that doesn't mean if Trey Turner is available in the second round or something like that, that I'd pass on him. No, I think he's a top 15 player, regardless of the short track record. But I'm going for the solid skills, the solid health record. I'm going for that early. And then, you know, for guys like Stanton, I think if he's available in round two, early round three, somewhere in there, I'm one of those guys that will go ahead and take the risk and say, all right, I'm going to pick and choose where I'm going to spend my risk bucks, if sort of put it out there like that, and say, all right, I'm going to do it here. Now, later on in the draft, when I have an opportunity to maybe go with a Matt Harvey or a Masahiro Tanaka, you know, or somebody that's a little bit more stable, like a Rick Porcello or something like that, then I'll opt for maybe going the safer route later on. So you balance it out and you take your shots where you think you get the most value for it, but you do have to do a little balancing act.
You know, I just want to throw this out real quick because you just sparked this in my head. This would be a really funny exercise because I like that idea of risk bucks. And what if you did something like this? So follow me for a second. I'm going to totally nerd out here. And Spore, you might like this. Is, let's say, yeah, you probably won't because I'm saying it, so it'll be worthless. But let's say you have 23 rounds. And each round has the opposite dollar value. So first round has a $23 risk buck. The last round has a dollar risk buck. And then you set the budget at $30. And you have 30 risk dollars to use in your draft. And that can be your baseline of where you take your risk. So if you want to do it in the first round, you've used, you know, whatever the percentile is, about 80% of your risk bucks.
Yeah.
Can I start this movement? Paul, will you agree with this movement, please? Yeah, Steve likes it.
I'm on board.
And he's an award-winning person.
Paul? Gotta be behind this.
Wow.
Paul, come on.
Wow.
Are you with my risk buck thing?
I'm thinking through it here. So you have to assess a value of risk bucks for every player?
Every round. Exactly. So
if you have 23 rounds, round one is 23 risk dollars. So you put yourself at a $30 limit. So if you did round one, you can only have $7 more of risks.
How many bucks do I spend, though, if I take Billy Hamilton in the second round when he's a third or fourth rounder? Like,
That's 22.
Blowing bucks.
Because you're blowing up ADP and you're blowing up market value, let's say. So taking Billy Hamilton in the second, that is 22 risk bucks.
But Trey Turner is a first round pick, and I think he would have risk.
I think you can put 23 risk bucks to it.
And do you get money back if somebody falls?
Maybe.
You get money back if somebody falls.
You could. Well, I would just point out, though,
we're onto something.
Yeah, we're onto something. So, okay, remember this, Bogman. Remember, I've been preaching this. I'm not against taking Trey Turner in the first round, but my prime player I want to pair with him is Miguel Cabrera. So no risk bucks in second round.
As
but
safe as you can.
You can't
Miguel
get
Cabrera has zero risk. Mike Trout has zero risk, right?
So zero risk. Board, whatever. Zero risk.
Yeah.
Miguel Cabrera has zero risk, but if I take him pick five, didn't I take him over other guys? I still feel like I didn't spend any risk, though.
I think I might
have bypassed
flushed
other
out.
Guys.
I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's not.
Absolutely.
You know, you're kind of onto something. That isn't an inherent risk. That's just a value. That's a value change. I mean, I'm not saying,
because if I pick five, that's my only chance to get Miguel Cabrera.
Yes,
there's almost
right.
no chance he's going to loop back around to me. So that, you know, that you have to take that into consideration. Like, this is my only chance to get him. That's why I'm, you know, whenever someone says, well, this guy's a first rounder, but you can't take him there. Well, if he's a first rounder and that's my first round pick, I know there is some delineation between first rounders, but I'm just saying, like, how hard and fast. I do think there is a
how about this? I got it
here, though. For
I
sure.
got it. Half the risk bucks. So it's call it 12 risk bucks for taking for demolishing ADP value in a given round like that. It's half the risk bucks. We're spending like half the podcast on this, so I didn't mean to do it, but Steve is a genius.
I'll trade you 8 risk bucks for 1 cutter, the Welsh.
There's no dollar value on my cutter, Bogman. It's legit.
You're right.
It's zero.
Hey, set myself up for that. Okay, so Steve, I think
you were going to say it's priceless. And we shut that down.
Yeah, David priceless and not even playing. Okay, I like it.
Oh, so, roast it.
Boom. So, so Steve, I'm in agreement, and I totally think we're onto something with the risk evaluation and the risk bucks. And I just want my face on the dollar. But like, let's take Beautiful. You've kind of answered some
and
of
I
these.
And I would love to work a Zach Britton reference in here about Buck Showalter not taking the risk or whatever. But
we'll, yes, well I got to
flesh that out later on.
No reason. He has like this big stack of risk bucks.
I've got
should cost him all of his bucks, his regular bucks.
Yeah, I got a word to go with this, but we have to bleep it out. So we're good with the buck bucks here.
All right, we're putting the brakes on once again. We got to stop, pay some bills. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fire table, round table, fire camp.
Fire.
More.
Fire.
More. Fire. More coming up after this break.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we are back for more of the Fantasy Forum Roundtable, whatever we call it, edition. It's Bogman, it's the Welsh, it is Paul Spohr and Steve Gardner. We're pretty much the best fantasy baseball talk that you could have. Let's pick right back up. Lastly, because I want to go to Paul here on this, what about, because we talked Turner, you talked Stanton, what about Price and Desmond? Those are two key injury guys right now. What's your comfort level with, A, would you own them, and B, where's the spot where you would take either one of those guys?
I already have them.
Well, no, I want to ask Steve this. We're coming back to you, Paul. We're coming back to you.
Okay.
We're coming back to you, Paul.
And I took them at prices that I was comfortable with in the third and fourth round, but now I'm screwed. Jason Clayton and I are
close.
You
don't draft until the end of March.
That's a good point.
The guy on the line is in charge of that. Listen, I actually like that.
I like to punish Paul.
It changes things. It's really interesting, though, right? Because you can easily go the other way. You can steal some guys late whose outlook completely changes. With those two, I don't know. I'm probably not going to get too many more shares. I was going to have Ian Desmond everywhere, and I just can't now. I mean, I might get one more share for the road, but as far as price goes, no thanks. I just don't see a reason. When I have comparables like Cueto and Verlander in his tier, I don't see a reason to continue to to stock up. I know he's going to drop down, but probably not to a level where I'm saying David Price is going to be some sharp value.
What There's is still, that level for Price?
It would have to be like the ninth or tenth round, probably, and that's just not going to happen.
No.
I just don't think that's going to happen in a 15-team league.
What about Desmond right now? What if you're drafting tomorrow? Are you where would you even touch it, and where would he go?
Same sort of deal, because he was our fourth rounder, so you got to get him in the ninth, tenth round, and if he drops there, then yeah, I will get back in and take a look, because you know what is Logan Forsythe going to do in a full season? We took him in the 11th round, probably something of what 5 months. Or four and a half months of Ian Desmond in Colorado could look like. So I don't think it would be out of bounds, but I just don't know that people are going to let him sink all the way to the 10th or 11th round.
All right, we'll come back to Paul here in a second. Steve, real quick, Price and Desmond, same question. Will you even touch them, and what's the area?
Yeah, here's the thing with Price. I think there's the chance that if he does pitch, he won't be as effective as David Price normally is. So I think that depresses his value a lot more. With Desmond, I think he can probably come back, and if he does take a couple of months or whatever to heal, he can come back and be pretty close to what we expect from Desmond. So I think I will take probably a chance on Desmond before Price, and remember the fact that you do have somebody in that lineup spot that you take Desmond at to replace him while he's out. So it's not like you lose, you know, you're taking 2 months worth of zeros. If you can get somebody to just be somewhat comparable or competent even.
How about like Mike Napoli in the 200 range to fill in for Desmond?
Yeah, and you could get him to just be standard generic Mike Napoli and hit a few dingers, and then you can bring Desmond back and he's somewhere close to what we expect, then I think there is some value to be had. So I would look for him possibly if his price falls enough to go ahead and jump on that.
Okay, so Paul,
of course I got Michael Brantley last year thinking the same thing, yeah. And he never got.
We all got burned by that one. Paul, the arching question here, risk versus reward. You've already covered Price and Desmond. Stanton, Turner, for those different reasons. How are you approaching risk versus reward, especially with my new amazing risk buck idea?
I mean, it's a balanced assessment. I completely agree with Steve on that aspect. And you do, like what you're saying is almost, I think something, I want to say maybe Todd Zola or Ron Chandler did it, where they talked about having a sheet where they kind of did credits and debits, and they were just saying, okay,
Don't take this from me.
I'm not. I don't think it's the same thing. It's that
30
similar
other
sort
nerds
of thing.
Haven't come up with the nerdy thing you just came up with. Come on.
Yeah. It's just like where you kind of like track it, though, where you're saying, okay, I took a pretty strong risk here. Let me balance it out with two steady veterans. The dirty secret is we can't mitigate risk completely no matter what we do. You know, you take Hunter Pence is the healthiest compiler ever until he's not, and now he's not.
Yeah.
And you know, Adam Jones is getting some love as that guy this year, and I totally get that, and then where his price is going, I'd be open to taking him. And then if he gets hurt, he's this healthy steady compiler until he's not. So we can never fully mitigate it, but I do feel like you have to go balance. The league context will matter. Something like labor mix, they don't really care who finishes second and beyond. So if you take a little bit more risk, hoping to pop big on some guys and get a leg up, I can completely understand that. But for the most part, you play it pretty close to the vest and probably lean closer to the less risky if you're going to do an assessment and say, you know, 60 stable, 40 risk or something like that in terms of how you want to break it down.
Because are you going to take Stanton and Pollock? Like, are you willing to get in on them?
I mean, one, yeah, probably. I would have a share of one or the other, but I'm not inherently seeking them out. Like, is there really any sort of discount on Stanton? No. So there's plenty of risk still there. Like, at some point, we have to just believe what we see, which is that this guy gets hurt every year, and he's still good for 30 homers. And the same calculation as we made that Steve was talking about, where you factor in what you got out of that slot as well. So if you found a guy who can hit you 15 homers while he's out, it was a 45 homer slot. And so that's great. But if you're still waiting for that 55 homer season and the big colossal breakout from Giancarlo Stanton, you're running out of breath. I mean, you're running out of time holding your breath on that one. And I would love to see it happen. I will totally say, listen, he finally did it. But how many years do we need until he's not going to do it?
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, risk versus reward. Bogman, you're still off floor, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, not wholly and completely. I'll take risks. I just won't take the normal risks that I'm not going to take Pollock. I'm not going to take Stanton. You know, I don't need a half a season out of anyone.
Well, here's one. You guys were talking about this in the most recent episode that I listened to. I think you were saying, Welsh, that you would take Bregman and Benintendi. And
yes.
that's too much risk.
That's something more that I would be more comfortable doing that than I would taking Pollock and Stanton.
Okay, that's a great question. Paul, would you rather take Stanton in the third and Pollock in the fourth, or would you rather take Bregman in the seventh and Benintendi in the eighth?
Stanton and Pollock.
Steve, what about you? Steve, what about you real quick?
No question, I would take Stanton and Pollock.
Okay. Bogman?
Benintendi and Bregman. I feel like they're young. They haven't let me down yet. So
you hit on it. They haven't let me down yet. And the fantasy baseball community loves somebody that hasn't let them down yet. And the second that they get let down, they have this inordinate reaction to the other side where they completely push them off the radar.
Push them off the radar. I'm
talking about the community at large.
I understand. But if Stan plays 155 games, dude, he could be the number one player. I don't think that's really that debatable, but I don't think he'll ever play 155 games. So,
but how likely is it that Bregman and Benintendi both or even either do what Pollock's best year has been?
I think that's minimal. Yeah, and I would preface to say, too,
but you can take better players in their third and fourth round slots, sure, and take the risk later. Like that, that's to me, it's more that than anything is I know I'm going to take a solid third and a solid fourth round player. So I'll take my risk a little bit later. So I know I have my strong, you know, oak type players higher than taking them lower. That's all.
And I'm in agreement with Paul and Steve. I just want to point that out. Like, I know I said that. I would take Pollock and Stanton because I'm less afraid to take that risk this year. I'll bet
We all admit that you're dumb if you take both of them.
If you take
Pollock on your team.
No, I don't.
That's a dumb.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Pollock. I mean, it's freak injuries are what have derailed him.
And he left yesterday with a groin injury.
Can I contend that Stanton is stable? I mean, he has why not? He gets you 30 homers every year.
Get 100 games out of him every year, yeah.
Well, I guess, much better in Roto, but if you're in head-to-head, you don't have him at the end of the year, in a year, like Strasburg.
I have a brain. I don't play head-to-head. Come on.
Oh, what?
I'm just kidding. Suck it, fantasy football. You're the worst.
I love it. I would have to – it's actually funny. If we took the combos here, I would probably be most likely to take – I think Stanton and Benintendi as the combo. I'm cooling. I don't think I'll have Bregman and Benintendi in any league, but I'm saying I'm not necessarily.
I think you should get Bregman over the two, by the way. What is Benintendi's real fantasy upside this year? Like, what does he have like a legitimate shot to do upside wise? Like,
Yelich.
That is fantasy impactful.
Yelich.
You think he can be Christian Yelich year one? I just don't see that year one.
I think
one.
That's his upside. I don't think that's what he's going to do. I just think that's his upside.
You know, I know you're not projecting him for that, but how likely at the pick that he's going, which is now a single digit round after finishing first on all these systems, if you think he's Yelich, isn't he just going to follow the Yelich path, which is, you know, a strong 2014 with 9 homers, 21 stolen bases and a .284 average, and then 7 and 16, and then the 21-9 last year. The average was always good, but the fantasy output wasn't that great. Like, I don't know. I mean, and that's the upside, right? That's not even what we're really thinking that we're going
to
get.
I would say the median line on Benintendi is 12 to 15 homers in the 20-plus stolen base marker, and it's in the .280 average type of thing. I actually saw I think someone asked Eno this, and I thought it was really interesting. I would say I actually like that comp of Yelich. I would put like a Benintendi to a Yelich, and then I saw this one where it was asked Bregman to Rendon, and I would say I think there are comparables to the seasons those two veterans just had that you're getting with those two players. And you have to be careful. We have to be careful in all of this. The one thing I want to preface, and I'm curious what you have to say about this as well, Steve, is that all of these things that we're talking about, taking Stanton and Pollock, taking Bregman and Benintendi, taking Benintendi in the eighth, taking him over Bregman, it is all contingent on what you do in the draft. None of it, to me, sure, is gospel. I would never come on here and say, oh, that's what
absolutely.
I'm doing that. No, absolutely not. Because if I took Trey Turner in the first, and then I took Stanton in the third, and then I took, I don't know, you know, whatever, David Price in the fifth, some dumb thing. You know what I'm saying? What I'm getting at. If I have a lot of inherent risk, I'm not going to go and add Bregman and Benintendi on top of it. I'm not an insane person. It's all dependent on where you are. Now, if you have a floor team, if you went out and got, you know, Donaldson and Miguel Cabrera, and then you got like a Kluber in the third round and you just keep going, I think you can take a risk and you can go, and not that you would need Bregman, but you could take a Bregman. You could take a Benintendi. You can take that upside because you went total floor. Steve, what do you think about this argument that we're having on the Bregman Benintendi upside and what I just said?
No, I think you're exactly right. And the fact that you have to take some of those. I think if you're going to win the league, you're going to have to push the envelope a little bit. You can't just play straight down all healthy, you know, A health grade players. And that's going to be a boring roster, number one, and probably not going to be enough. You've got to hit on those guys, you know, the VRs from last year, you know, or a Benintendi could be that guy this year, or Bregman could be that too. You need to get those guys that have the upside that are going to propel you further up in the standings than you would normally get from your basic eighth round pick. So I think you have to have those guys. You have to have at least a couple of them interspersed without your throughout your draft.
Just to play devil's advocate, I would contend that the boring guys can be that guy too, though.
I agree with that.
I don't think anybody necessarily
No risk. You're playing for third place. Like, no risk at all, though. You're playing. You're really playing for third, right?
No, not necessarily. I mean, who had Adrian Beltre down for 32-104 last year after going 1977 and 1883?
How about Nelson Cruz? Nelson Cruz, boring as hell and old. Yeah.
And had that break off with Baltimore, goes to Seattle, everyone freaks out, doesn't want to take him, and he's been amazing the last 2 years. So I think that, I don't know that you inherently have to take young risk. I think if you just take quality skills up and down, it can still work. I don't know, the part that Steve hit on is the part that a lot of people get hung up on, and I get it, because I'm all about getting shiny new toys, but he said it'd be a boring roster, and at the heart of it, we still want to have fun. So I completely get it. Nobody wants to just do a straight draft of the boring, 27 to 32 year olds. But I absolutely think that kind of roster can win. I don't think you inherently need 25 and under risk on your team to win. And yeah. I
don't think 25 or under risk. I'm just saying risk somewhere.
Yeah. And
I will say that the Benintendi speed projection is where I strongly disagree with you, Welsh, because he only stole about 20 per 600 plate appearances in the minors. He only had 657 plate appearances, and he stole 26, but it was on a 68% clip. He wasn't even above average in the minors in base stealing. And the majors is much harder. We see guys like Jock Peterson, who stole about 30 per 600 plate appearances with a much better rate. He hasn't run. I think you're getting a double-double out of Benintendi, but that's going to be like 12 homers, 11 stolen bases, probably a 285 average and good runs RBIs. But I just don't know that there's colossal upside in year one.
It could be like Springer. It could be like Springer as well. And hey, listen, that risk with Benintendi, I'm doing it in the eighth round. And that's where I'm a little bit more comfortable. If I miss on that, it's not the be all end all. Last little thing I'd point out, if you were comparing Bregman to Benintendi, go back to our position depth conversation, where outfield it was second to worst, and you're looking at third base possibly being the highest. And Bregman's really only going to qualify at third base this year. They could be very similar in numbers, though Bregman is more the power guy for sure, but I think the speed could come down a little bit. But these are great takes. These are all really great takes.
And
I couldn't have asked for anything better from this risk versus reward conversation, because there's no clear cut. There's no clear cut person to
standard
point to
answer, right.
To risk, because risk is having no return value. You know, you're sucking all the equity out. There's no equity coming back. It could be a player that's consistently injured, or it could be a player that is injured. All of those factors in here.
One more break, but stick around. You gotta love what you're hearing. This has been amazing. The only thing that would make it better is the s'mores I was promised by at Is It the Welsh. We'll see you guys after this break. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, final segment here on In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are doing some of these player debates with Spore, Gardner, myself, and Bogman. This has been a fantastic episode, so go back on demand if you missed any of it. But let's pick right back up the Fantasy Forum with some player debates. So these player debates are going to work like this. You're just going to pick the player with whatever projection I've put to them. So some of these are round. A couple of these are based off of ADP and which player you'd rather take. And Bogman, you and I, We'll just jump in here on our choices as we do this. And actually, Bogman, let's start with you, because let's get some Bogman takes here. First one I put up here, this is on shortstops. And I'm curious to see where you're going to go with this. I kind of think I know where you're going to go. Carlos Correa in the second round or Trevor Story in the third round. Who are you taking?
I would rather have Story in the third, because I want whoever that second round pick is to not be a shortstop, because I like the shortstop depth. So I would just be I love Story, and I know a lot of people don't, and I'm fine with that, but I would rather be taking my shortstop later. So if it was Gray in the second or X in the sixth, I would also rather take whoever it is in the sixth, just because I like the shortstop depth. So for me, it'd definitely be Story in the third.
All right, Paul Spore with the tightest tie game in the entire industry, Carlos Correa in the second round or Trevor Story in the third round.
I flip on Bogman here because of the people that you've named. I actually like Trevor Story just as much as anybody in the industry. I think he's a viable second round pick himself, to be quite honest. But I do take Correa ahead of him. I think remember last year everyone had the big breakout coming for Correa because they, you know, extrapolated his 99 games and the fact that he's an elite prospect. And now his season is viewed as a disappointment last year, which is absolutely insane. He went 20-96 with 13 stolen bases, 76 runs and a .274 average. That's an amazing season. That's perfectly viable in the first round, even though it wasn't some superstar take. I think he builds on that, though. I think this is the year that we get the step forward for him. And he doesn't have the batting average risk Correa doesn't that Story does. And so even though Story is probably going to have more homers, probably not necessarily either, by the way, because look at some of the power that Carlos Correa has been showing. I think Correa could beat him in every category unless Story runs wild. I think Correa is going to live in this teens range with great reliability, 27 for 34 for his career. But it has to be Correa for me. I have both in the second round, though, just a couple picks apart.
All right, Steve. Yeah, Trevor Story can't go against the Diamondbacks every single week, so he can't have 70 homers in the season. So, Steve, what do you think? Carlos Correa, second round. Trevor Story, third round.
I've got Correa borderline first round pick. I think he's going to be a superstar, and he's going to take the next leap. You know, that as Paul was saying, it was like almost a disappointment that he couldn't keep up all of his rates from the season before. I think he bounces back and sort of comes close to that. With Story, the one thing I worry about with him, where is he going to hit in the batting order? If he hits down in the, you know, six or seven, that's going to be fewer at bats for him. And I think he's got a lot of swing and miss in his game, and I think that's one thing that's going to hold him back. I would take Correa.
I am going to echo what both you guys just said, because I'm a Correa guy for sure. I've had Correa like at the first round marker, you know, the 12 spot for most of the season. I just have a hard time passing on him. I get just so excited if I'm pick like 11 or 12 and I can go back to back like Correa, Miguel Cabrera or something like that. It gets me super excited about that. And I agree. I like the return to form of Correa. This time next season, we'll be talking about Correa probably in the same prospects of Manny Machado and them. It's nothing against Trevor Story or anything like that, but I think there's still a plentiful great players that are still sitting.
Yeah, I want Addison Russell over both these guys because I want to take my shortstop later.
Oh, okay.
There's a middle position.
What's the middle position?
The middle infield. You can still get
you
him.
Like Russell.
I would have no problem taking one of these two, and then I'm still getting Russell from everybody. I absolutely love him. Shortstop does have some depth, but that doesn't, just because there's depth doesn't mean you want to ignore the upper tier.
I don't want to ignore the upper tier, but in most of my strategy, I'm not getting Clayton in the first round, and I want to take one of those starting pitchers just because I feel like starting pitcher, while, you know, it is pretty deep this year, I feel like it's riskier than most years. So I just want a starting pitcher.
Yeah, Bogman definitely is an SP second round. All right, let's go to this next one here. I'm moving away from rounds, and I just pulled up some. I think these were Yahoo ADPs I pulled up. These guys are right next to each other. So it becomes about the preference of these players. Steve, actually, why don't we start with you this round? Very similar players. One has the speed. The other has prolific power. I'm talking about Crush Chris Davis, who's got an ADP right now of 66. Versus Todd Frazier, who has an ADP of 70. These are Yahoo. They're in the relative range, though. And Todd Frazier going after Chris Davis in a lot of instances, but had the speed going. What do you think? If you had to pick one of these batting average albatrosses, which area would you go?
I would go with Chris Davis. I like the fact that he's going to be playing in a better offense. You know, Todd Frazier does have Jose Abreu in there, but Jose Abreu doesn't have any wheels and doesn't score, you know, is not going to score from first base on a Todd Frazier double. I think, you know, Chris Davis has Manny Machado and Adam Jones and guys like that ahead of him to be able to drive them in. So I think the numbers for Chris Davis will be better. And the fact that, you know, he got gypped a little bit on batting average average on balls in play last year. So I think that 221 is maybe a little bit worse than it should have been. I think he's got more batting average rebound in him than Todd Frazier does. So I will take Chris Davis.
Bogman, let's go to you, and then we'll go to Spore after this. What do you think? We've talked up and down about Todd Frazier, and then you get Chris Davis in here. Where are you going to go?
Tell you, this is the one where there's a first base and a CI, like Spore said for MI. I like taking both of these guys. I would go with Frazier. I kind of expect Frazier to get traded at some point and be in a better lineup, and he's got the swipes, and they both hit for crap. So I'll take Todd Frazier out of these two guys.
All right, Spore, what do you think? Break this up here. Where are you going?
That's Frazier for sure. I mean, they have the same power, yet I can get the stolen bases. I mean, they had the same power last year, same isolated average at 239. 40 homers actually outdid Chris Davis's. Frazier had 40. Chris Davis had 38. Davis had him 10 runs, but Frazier had, 14 more ribbies, and then, of course, 14 more stolen bases. And so every year there's something with Chris Davis. Yeah, he's had those two big spike years, particularly 2013 was amazing, and 2015 was good when he got back on his Adderall. But the other 2 years around it, 14 and 16, I don't know. And he's just so BABIP dependent. I know a lot of guys are, but it's weird to say it about a power guy, but he absolutely is. So given the speed issues that we talked about earlier, it's Frazier pretty easily for me.
Yeah, I'm
even though Steve is a genius.
Third round, Corey Kluber. Or how about fifth round, Chris Archer? Which area do you go?
Well, over at the Hardball Times last week, I wrote an entire piece on fading aces and not taking the aces. And I came up with kind of, reasonable facsimiles of them that you could get later and kind of hope for them to break out and kind of emulate their guy. And, you know, Kluber was included in that in terms of guys that I'm moving away from because I feel like I can get their value elsewhere. Archer was not one of his comparisons, but I would take Archer. He was actually one of the comparisons for, I believe, you. Darvish, because I also did one for him. Or no, it was actually for Max Scherzer, based on his high strikeout potential. The fact that he's had a home run issue last year. Scherzer's had a home run issue before. They were a little bit comparable. It's Archer for me, just because I want similar to how Bogman wants that second round pitcher. I desperately do not want that second or third round pitcher. I want the second and third round hitter, and I will wait for the pitcher. So I will go fourth or fifth round with Chris Archer.
All right, Steve, what do you think? Kluber in the third or Archer in the fifth?
I should take Archer in the fifth, but I will guarantee you if Corey Kluber is available in the third round, I will take him. He is one of the locks in my rankings. I've got him ahead of Thor even. I've got him at number three.
Wow.
So I'm a big Corey Kluber guy. And you know, maybe I think there was a little bit of an injury thing this spring that is kind of making me waver a little bit. But no, I love Corey Kluber. I love his bulldog mentality. And the fact that he's going to pitch 230 innings or whatever, even if they say they're going to back off on him and may not start him on opening day, I think that's bull. I think you've got the horse. You're going to ride him. And I think that's what Cleveland is going to do this season. I love Corey Kluber, so I can't pass him up. I will guarantee you that. I got him on my AL labor team and paid $29 for him. And I can't quit him. So
I love it.
Maybe it won't be the smart thing to do, but it's what I'll do every time.
All right, Bogman, what do you think? Arrieta in the third or Archer in the fifth? Or, I'm sorry, Kluber in the third, Archer in the fifth.
I'm going to go with Kluber also, because if I'm taking Kluber in the third, that means I probably didn't get my second round pitcher that I usually want. And I'm going with Kluber. And I like both these guys. So these are two guys I wouldn't mind taking together, to be honest with you. But if I had to pick one, I'll take Kluber over Archer.
Well, everybody knows it's Archer for me. That's clear that it's Archer for me. That's like prime
territory.
You want
to move in with Archer.
Yeah, well, I love the guy. It's fantastic hair. I'm so envious of that hair. I wish I had it. I want to. I can't quit it. I can't quit that hair. But yeah, I want to have four straight hitters and then jump in the fifth with Archer for sure. All right, last one, guys. You guys have been awesome for this really, really cool show. The Town Hall Fantasy Forum Campfire.
Where are my
soup
s'mores?
Talk. Yeah, they're there, Bogdan.
You said campfire. I need s'mores, clearly.
Yeah, we don't need one of
Not
us.
Not a skinny guy. S'mores.
Neither one of us need those. All right, last one here. That's and true. This is a three-parter. I put three players together, and let's pick and choose. And Bogman, we'll start with you. I'm actually going to start with you. I'll give my take, and then we'll have our guest be last. Ryan Braun, the cheating Ryan Braun, Bogman, in the third.
Flying cheater.
I already actually know who you're going to say here. Cespedes in the fifth or Polanco in the sixth. And tell me about Cespedes in the fifth.
Cespedes. It's Cespedes in the fifth. It's there's no one that has a higher floor to me than Cespedes. That is a super safe pick. I'll assume I have some type of risk either I've taken or come up. I want Cespedes in the fifth. Easy for me. Not even close. Easy.
Okay. I am going to go... I think I'm going to lean Polanco in the sixth, to be honest with you. Like, I don't hate... You and I had a conversation, even though we're both not Braun guys. Like, you can't, like, ignore what he's doing.
Right.
And I kind of wanted to put Cespedes in the fourth here, but I'm not sure it would change anybody's arguments, and I don't think it would change mine necessarily. I'm being a little generous with Cespedes in the fifth, but I don't know. I still like Polanco. I like the mix. There's some swing and strike to the game. I don't know. I like the improvements. I'm going to go with Polanco in the sixth. Steve, what do you think? Cespedes in the fifth, Braun in the third, Polanco in the sixth.
Well, you hit it for me. I think Polanco has the upside. He's younger. He's got the ability to get better. I mean, he went from 9 home runs in 2015 to 22 last year. Increased the RBIs. I think that's a huge value for him. In fact, you know, again, I hate going back to the labor mixed draft, but I took Braun in the third round, thought I had a pretty good value there. Polanco went with the next pick right after that in the third round, and Cespedes went in the fourth. So I think just Polanco, the fact that he'll run, he'll steal some bases, and the fact that he's younger and could possibly get even better. He doesn't have the batting average that the other two guys do, but I think that's more than outweighed by the value that you get taking him later.
What do you think, Paul?
Polanco star breakout this year.
Boom.
Ah.
That's the homie.
I like that. I mean, I like taking Polanco also, but Cespedes is my guy. Everybody,
you already had Cespedes, yeah. Because you stay in your corner.
Yeah. No.
Hey, trust me, I'm not changing. I love Cespedes probably more than anybody does. I mean, 30, 190 with 280 every single year. Love it. You just write it in. He's amazing.
Yeah,
I love.
He's a monster.
Yeah, I like that we all didn't take Braun though. That's the big winner here. That Braun was not taken out of all these. Yeah, exactly. Well, my favorite part has been this ridiculous. Fun time with some of the best guys in the industry. You know, the thing we didn't even talk about, really, we didn't talk about, and I want you guys to get proper plugs. Paul, why don't you really quickly talk to everybody about Sleeper on the Bus? What's on the docket for this season? One of the best mainstay podcast. I mean, it's if you know this podcast, you don't listen to Sleeper on the Bus, you're doing something wrong, and this is coming from a podcaster. Like, you have to listen to Sleeper on the Bus. So what do you guys have on the docket happening this year?
We're expanding. We're going to 4 episodes during the week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Not 100% certain on the plans with that, so I can't got to keep that under wraps in terms of how that's going to go, but it is going to be 4 episodes. And Jason and I actually just recorded tomorrow's podcast before this. This is my 4th podcast of the day. Recording.
Oh, and it's probably the longest.
And,
beautiful.
It is the longest. And what we decided, we were kind of talking it out on air, we're going to move to Saturday morning record times so that Jason and I have a chance to actually talk.